Ever since Yuri Gagarin's trailblazing flight in 1961, humanity has been steadily extending its reach beyond the Earth. And for almost a quarter of a century now, astronauts have lived and worked continuously aboard the International Space Station. China's Tiangong station now orbits alongside it, and new stations are already in development. Private industry is envisaging space hotels, farms, forges, and even renewable energy sources all up there in orbit. To whet our appetites for the future that awaits us and the work that it's going to involve, here's space writer and broadcaster David Whitehouse.
Space is a unique environment. We cannot recreate space here down on the ground. I mean, principally, microgravity. Now, you can do experiments with so-called drop towers, where you drop canisters from a large height, and for a few seconds they experience weightlessness. And that's interesting, but it's not very effective if you want to examine what weightlessness does on drugs, on materials, on the human body, on structures. So you really need to get up into space to see what this environment is like and what you can do there. Of course, an almost perfect vacuum up there in space, so that has its uses as well with experiments put on the outside of satellites. You have, of course, sunlight, which, if you're in the right orbit, you have perpetual energy. You have resources on the moon. You have resources on asteroids, which potentially, if you have the means of getting up there and getting the stuff back down, or even just manufacturing and using the stuff in orbit, is far more effective and much more interesting than the huge labour you need to dig things up on the ground and take them up into space to work on them. If we want to explore space, we've got to learn how to live off the land, if you like, live off the space.
So what steps have we taken towards those goals so far?
It depends upon which area you're talking about. There has been, since the 1950s, a great debate about getting energy from space. Most studies want to make electricity from sunlight and then get it back down to the Earth. And there are two big problems with that is, first of all, you need a huge acreage. You need a huge area to gather this sunlight. And that involves a lot of space construction. And of course, you've got to get the energy back down. And most studies involve microwave beaming down to a receiving station. And that has to be done very carefully, because where do you put the receiving station? And what are the health implications of not getting the beam quite on the right place or accidentally irradiating a city? So, great idea. But we're really in the early stages of working out the practicalities for that. The principal one being, how do you get so much stuff up into space?
What about making things in space? People are talking about exploiting microgravity, because crystals grow in a certain way on Earth because of the influence of gravity. So can we get exciting exotic crystals in space that you couldn't get down on the ground?
Theoretically, you could. I mean, there have been loads of experiments on the International Space Station and on the space shuttle to grow crystals, to grow alloys. So John Brown, the tractor company, very famous in the United States, had an enormous project to mix alloys in space to see if they could be made stronger, cheaper, lighter. And they got some information, and that was instructive, because what they found out doesn't mean they were going to manufacture in space. It improved their manufacturing down here on the ground. So that was useful information. So there are lots of case studies of purifying drugs, of growing crystals, of alloys, of mixing, of combustion in space, which has got very useful information to help ground-based processes. None of them so far have been exciting enough to scale up, in the sense that that process, that mixing, that alloy, that development in space, if we could do that 100, 1,000 times in quantity and then bring it back to Earth, we can make a lot of money. Nobody's been able to make that leap because it's too expensive at the moment to get it into space and to bring it back. We're waiting for people to make proper, cheaper roads into space.
Is the alternative then to say, well, why bring it back? Why not envisage a future in space and we build an industry around the future of us in space?
That's a very good question. And that probably is the direction we are going to go. So one of the most impressive things over the last few years has been Elon Musk's SpaceX launching Starlink satellites for internet communications all over the world. And believe it or not, 2/3 of all the operational satellites in space are Starlink internet satellites. He has launched thousands and thousands of these, and they work in an exquisite, coordinated way. So you could imagine that the first solar farms would be mass-produced satellites like the Starlink satellites, and they would be, if you like, scattered out into space on board a Falcon rocket, and then they would automatically assemble themselves in the same way that drones fly in formation on the Earth. They would assemble themselves into larger structures and then do experiments with beaming their energy back down to the Earth. And that would be fascinating because AI could control the configuration. If a panel got damaged, it could fly away and a new one could fly in, and it could change its shape and its orientation. And that is a very exciting conceptual idea, using something we've already done. We've already put thousands of satellites of a similar design into space. Well, that could be applied to space energy in the next 10 years.
Indeed it could, and that is what our next guest has in mind. That was writer and space scientist David Whitehouse.